Matt, I'm super excited to welcome you to the Upfront stage.
Thank you.
Awesome to be here. We're going to have a good conversation here. Being able to hear all of Matt's wisdom for a couple decades plus, not to age you, but I think that's incredibly important to put in context in terms of the history you've had in this field and in this industry. And lots of people are saying venture is really hard right now, that it's hard to raise a fund, it's hard to manage portfolio companies, burn rates, internal partner dynamics. And I'd love to maybe start off by just getting a sense from you, just your mindset right now as it relates to just this overall world of venture capital that you're living and operating in.
Sure. Well, first of all, it's not unusual for it to be hard. It's supposed to be hard, right? Like, this is a hard business. And we go through these cycles when people think the business is overly easy. Anecdotally, when I started in the venture business, firms used to spend about 80% of their time on the portfolio. And that kind of ebbs and flows with cycles when companies seem like they need less help and less energy, when everything's kind of working. And then you get back to those cycles where it's really true. But over the last several years, it flipped to more firms spending more like 80% of the time sourcing, 20% of the time on portfolio. And that's just not what the business is about. So this is creating the rigor where we all get back to what helps make this industry stronger, which is investors digging in, really adding value with their entrepreneurs, building trust, things of that nature.
Yeah, that's great. And just kind of getting back to work, which I'm excited to do. And I'd love to maybe put today's era in the context of the overall just cycles we've seen over the years. And, you know, this session is called Melting the Ice. And, you know, we've seen many, many winters over the last couple of decades. You know, this is a new winter, or maybe not, depending on how you look at things. So, like, how are you perceiving the current venture climate as it relates to past cycles you've been a part of?
Sure. This one's unusual. Like, 2000 was the ice age. Like, anything you invested in just wasn't going to work. Even if you were spending 80% of your time on the portfolio, just there wasn't some new platform cycle. Buyers were on strike, all those kind of things. 2008 was more like of a flash freeze. It kind of came and went, and before companies ran out of money, things got better. This one's unusual because it's kind of like a long winter, but then spring is abounding around that. Green shoots are popping through the permafrost, and that's really because of what's going on in AI. But basically, if you look at the landscape of portfolio companies, companies decelerated their growth by 50 to 60, 70%. So you went from a world where VCs thought every company should be growing at 100%, right? We like to invest in outlier companies. The problem is right now, there just aren't that many companies growing at 100%. And you've got massive companies, massive portfolios of companies growing 30 to 50%. And so there's this kind of strange dynamic where VCs have enough of those in their own portfolio. So companies that would like to go out and raise, it's like, well, if you're growing 20 to 50%, I got enough of those. I don't need another one of those. So the kind of bid ask in the market is like, no, I only want the outlier. There aren't many outliers at 100% right now. Yeah. So what do you do with those portfolio companies? That's what we're really all digging in on.
Yeah. And so you mentioned this whole hope that there's the spring is coming, you're seeing green shoots. And I imagine, again, there's those companies you have where the founder feels like there's green shoots coming and there's being patient. But sometimes like there's like a delusional nature to what's actually happening. And so how do you like manage the dynamic of a founder trying to wait for those green shoots, continuing to do the same thing, but it's like, hey, like this is, something's going wrong here. Like, how do you manage that dynamic?
The main green shoot I was talking about was generative AI.
Okay.
That's like just a brand new plant.
Yeah.
All right, but you take the old plant and now it's got some green shoots coming off it. I mean, I think, first of all, when everything hit the fan in 2021, it was abrupt, right? Like, and people just had to, they didn't know what to think of it because it was very easy to sell. Like, people would say, hey, I'm going to sell multiple products out of the gate. I'm going to go global and I'm going to spend a lot of money because that's what the environment supported. So you've got to kind of strip that down and then say, okay, of the core atomic unit of thing that I want to sell, like, what is my addressable market? How efficiently can I do that? So the last year, 2023, was really about a lot of these companies refactoring themselves. So maybe I was selling to high growth tech companies, probably not such a good market to sell to anymore. I need to move up market. Maybe I need to take more of a vertical strategy. Maybe there's something about my product that's just kind of fell above the line. In a generous spending environment, I mean, one of the main things, as you know, that we went through was it felt like any single individual in a company was empowered to buy a product. Yep. Now you've got to convince their boss, the CFO, procurement, maybe even the CEO to make a sale. So companies kind of getting a sense of how to both sell differently, different sales playbooks, but also where your market really moved to. And one of the fundamental problems, a lot of companies have just fallen below that line.
Yeah.
And that's where the hardest work comes, is where do we go from here?
Yeah. On new deals and investment strategies, how have you guys, if at all, changed your investment strategies in the current climate?
I mean, that probably leads into some of what we're likely to talk about on the AI front. I think, you know, we're still, you know, in this mode of saying, like, look, we want to see companies that are growing, you know, north of 50%, not maybe necessarily north of 100%. And you want to feel like you don't want to go into a category where there are several companies. So I think there's cycles where it feels like all the companies in a segment are going to work. And now you're probably like, all right, there's one outsized winner. Maybe number two is going to lead to a yeah. decent outcome. So I think it's a little bit more, you know, focus down on what's a good investment. And we've always been very thematic. So we have kind of four main areas that we pursue. We do a lot of, you know, market maps and just a lot of rigor around what we're looking for. You know, there's times where being opportunistic seems like it can work. And this is one of those times where you will get completely burned because you don't know that there's five other competitors out there or what really distinctively, you know, differentiates a company.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get to generative AI definitely soon. I want to talk about just generally how you're working with founders in your portfolio. One of the things that I feel like matters most right now is how present you are with your founders, your boards, your companies, and just showing up. And the job right now, as you said earlier, it's like hard work. Like, you just can't show up to a quarterly board meeting and see right. numbers up and to the right, and you're like, okay, this is great. Like, right. what markup we're going to get?
More of that.
Yeah, no. Now it's like, oh, shit's actually not working, and yeah. we actually got to put our heads together and figure things out. And so I think talking about like how you as an investor board member perceive like showing up and being you know, a good partner to other investor board members and to the founders, like, how do you approach that? Because again, you've been doing this for so long and have, I'm sure, a playbook.
Yeah, well, I mean, probably because I grew up this way in the business, where you do spend 80% of your time on the portfolio, I'm just more accustomed to it, and I find it the most enjoyable part of the business. But like, in times like this, we really need to get in and dig in. And it's not about, like you said, showing up at a quarterly board meeting and being super prescriptive, because that's going to get you nowhere. You're going to lose trust with an entrepreneur. You're not going to be deep in all the facts and data. So it's really kind of spending a deep amount of time with that entrepreneur, other good board members if you have them, and kind of say, hey, what are the key issues? I mean, at the end of the day, we can't fix everything in a company. We need to be good at focusing yeah. on the top two to three issues and working closely with the entrepreneur on that in a very kind of collaborative way. Because if you're just giving prescriptive advice, it's going to backfire and not go anywhere. So, you know, basically you have to be like, hey, is it a team issue? Is it a TAM issue? Is it a market issue? Do we need to move to a different segment? Is there something about this product that's just not going to be relevant? And like, the amount of depth you have to get into yeah. to understand all those things and bring the entrepreneur along with you yeah. To be effective takes an enormous amount of time.
And we were talking about this a little bit backstage. Like, how do you approach a situation where it's like, you know what, maybe we should just call it. And there's like capital in the bank account, and you're just like, you know what, like, this like seems like it's probably time for a soft landing. Like, how do you approach that conversation?
You know, I think there's various different scenarios here. There's one where a company is just burning too much capital, they're going to hit a wall, and you're like, look, that's just not going to end well. There's others where, like, you have a decent amount of capital, so you can keep going to try to figure it out. And then the third scenario is like, well, we can get cash flow positive, right? Mm-hmm. And all of them are a little different, but they all beg the same question, is like, to what end? Where is this going? And there's different time urgency with each of those three scenarios, but I think we're all seeing those right now. So look, if an entrepreneur can get to cash flow positive and say, hey, like, I believe over time, even growing 10 to 20%, like, this is what I want to do, then, you know, have at it. That's yeah. great. I do think in some of those conversations, you're saying, make sure you really want to do this. Don't do it for your investors or yeah. for pride or ego. Like, because you think this is going to get to a decent outcome, down the road. But otherwise, we should really be thinking about, you know, selling the company. The things that, the ones that are really hard is where you have a bunch of capital, it's just not working, and are you just going to do a full pivot? And because the capital is there, there's the desire and opportunity to keep kind of iterating. And I think that's part of our role too, is to kind of make sure that doesn't go on for too long and provide the guidance on the entrepreneur about what the options are and get there sooner rather than later.
Yeah. All right. AI, what's exciting you guys? Where are you spending time?
Well, AI generally is obviously very exciting. It's kind of driving all of our time. The press reported we led the latest Anthropic round, which is pretty exciting. So that's very consistent with how we're investing. What we view in the near term is that it's more about picks and shovels. So really the surrounding infrastructure that helps everyone build at the application layer. So if you look at it, it's very analogous to what happened in the data stack, the next generation data stack 10 years ago. So you had Snowflake, Databricks, Fivetran, DBT, and all those companies were kind of defined early. So our view is that now is the time that the key infrastructure companies are going to be built. So there's this whole, you've heard about the RAG stack, there's a whole generative AI pipeline, which is you've got a lot of data sources, you need to curate the data, you need to do ETL, you need a vector database to load it into the LLM, and then you've got the LLMs. The LLMs are kind of analogous to the Databricks and Snowflake major players, but even when the cloud came out, there's so much surrounding infrastructure. It spawned, what, 8 kind of application management, performance management companies like Datadog. So tooling, middleware, workflows that help developers be more productive, all that's kind of in play right now. And that doesn't mean that we're not excited about the application layer, because we totally are. But the application layer happens over, so that's like a 10-year trend. In fact, you can argue that the second wave of applications will be better than the first, because those platforms are going to mature. Entrepreneurs' idea of how to use them will be better. And then at scale, with a little bit more time, you get more creativity around those next platforms. But like on the application layer already, we've got a company basically for mental health called Elios that's kind of like a therapist assistant. So you can see it coming up there. We've got a few in life sciences where you're using generative AI with kind of life sciences data sets, or a company like Typeface, which is the former CTO of Adobe, kind of reimagining Adobe's Creative Cloud from the bottom up with generative AI. So on and on. So don't get me wrong, applications are here and now, but the infrastructure area feels like it's a kind of time bound to get in the big winners.
Yeah, and like, what are you staying away from? Because there's obviously a lot of noise in the category as well. So like, what is like a not like an AI? Like, you see it's like dead on arrival.
Yeah, I mean, it's enticing just to jump in right now, and you've seen even, you know, in the last couple weeks on all these video creation platforms, and OpenAI comes out with one, and it's like, well, how big is this market? How granular is it going to get? How are all these companies going to compete against each other? So I think, you know, you have to be really careful about getting into a crowded category. And I think, and some things are unanswerable right now. Like, what ultimately will the large closed models provide? I mean, might they be the best at everything? Or do you believe more that small special models over time will be the winners? So I think it's that. I think it's, you know, things that feel like a bolt-on.
Yep.
Where it's kind of like, hey, we're not really generative AI. We didn't imagine the application from the ground up. Like, if generative AI didn't exist, this application shouldn't be built. Like, that's the kind of mindset that you want of this next generation of entrepreneur. But we have a whole framework of things like, hey, we look for companies that you want highly repetitive tasks. Do they have a proprietary data set? Do they have a special technical team that knows how to do something unique with the technology around this application? Or it either replaces a high number of low-paid jobs or a small number of high-paid jobs. So I think in all these things, you have to be rigorous with the framework to know what you're looking for. Because if you just wade into the waters right now, there's plenty to find. Yeah. And by the way, the other thing is, you know, which is back to this kind of spring coming through green shoots, the number of companies right now at like 0 to 5 million of ARR that are getting funded in the AI space at hundreds of millions of dollars, not a hundred, hundreds, is through the roof. So like, it's very hard as a venture investor to say, you can't build a portfolio that way.
Yeah.
So are you gonna be so good as a spearfisher to find that one, or are you gonna be like trolling with the net and end up with a big basket of overpriced assets? So, you know, that's kind of one of the challenges of investing right now. And that said, You know, the number of companies we've seen that go 0 to 20, 30 in a year, or much more significantly than that in the case of Anthropic, is like we've never, none of us have ever seen in our venture careers.
Yeah, it's crazy. And can you talk a little bit about how you may be helping your existing portfolio companies who maybe, you know, were founded and built technologies pre this Gen AI boom, where there's a huge opportunity for them to be thinking about how it layers into the overall technology stack and offering, because you guys are at such the front lines investing in some of these kind of new companies, these new foundational models and the like. And I'm sure it could be very educational for your existing portfolio companies in terms of what they should be doing. So is there any things you're doing with regards to education around some of this stuff, or no?
Yeah, I mean, we obviously were getting people in front of Anthropic very early on to get early access to their APIs. We're investors in Pinecone, which is the leading vector database, things like that. So kind of helping people understand the piece parts, but also connecting with them with each other. So we've done like mini kind of CEO gatherings where we talk about everybody's best practice and both what they're doing and how they're doing it. Because don't get me wrong, like the next frontier is definitely people doing applications, generative AI first. But every company should be doing something with generative AI because it makes a difference. It makes every application more usable. It brings data to life. It provides great writing and reasoning and output that didn't exist before. So we're telling all of our companies to be long on that. So I'd say the most specific thing we did was this kind of CEO roundtable across the portfolio where we talked about how to build it and what to do. And so if you look at, okay, so what it didn't, this didn't happen because of that event, but just in the terms of like the trajectory of people deploying generative AI, I'd say the first half of the year, probably less than 20% of the portfolio companies, and I'm talking 2023, had done anything with generative AI. We exited the year with 80% having built something with generative AI. Like you just don't see trends, even mobile, you didn't see happen that quickly.
Yeah, it's wild. Talk a little bit about like your stance on like AI ethics and any role you and Menlo should play with regards to just where all of this is going.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the reasons why we really liked Anthropic and their whole view of constitutional AI, safe AI, a lot of guardrails built into it. You know, I would say the majority of companies that we work with are kind of doing some kind of training of their own models to minimize nefarious output and things like that. You know, broadly speaking, what's Menlo's role? I'm not really sure, because oftentimes, you know, when people rush into an ecosystem, it's just kind of like, let's figure out how to do it, what to do, and then, you know, we'll figure out the collateral damage after that. But I do think it says a lot that we thought Anthropic was the right cultural fit and winner because of those their approach to safe AI.
Shifting gears a little bit, I want to talk about like timing of markets and generative AI. Clearly, we're right in the heat of it all. And, you know, one market in particular I've been spending a lot of time in over like the last several years, like AR, VR, spatial computing, and you see the Vision Pro. And if anyone's tried that, I mean, it's an amazing device. And from your experience, because you were early days iOS, part worked with Apple, the iFund, and really looking at how the ecosystem of applications could evolve there. Like spatial computing, Vision Pro, like are we potentially with that new device and category, like what's your take on that? Just from taking your history from looking at iOS and just, and should people be thinking about that right now, or are we like still way too early?
Well, first of all, I want it to succeed, because what makes this business interesting is when new platforms emerge, right? That's when you spawn a whole variety of applications, and we always need these waves. I think the issue with platforms, especially hardware platforms, I mean, let's talk about the iPhone. So when I ran the iFund, which was a $200 million collaborative fund with Apple, so like the first year there were only 1 million devices. And then after year two, there were like 8 million. And it took like 4 or 5 years to get to 100. So how do you build an interesting company on top of that? By the way, like when the iPhone came out, there wasn't even GPS. There wasn't an app store. It took until 2010 for there to be a front-facing camera. So I think oftentimes it's even like what I was saying before about why around generative AI, some of this is the platform matures. It opens up more capabilities. But especially on the hardware front, like, you know, Uber launched in 2011, Menlo Investment, in 2011, because that's when there was kind of a critical mass of devices in San Francisco, right? Snap was somewhere, you know, 2011, 2012, because there was a front-facing camera and there was some, new imagination. So I think that's really the challenge, especially with a new hardware platform, is two things. One, get enough volume of endpoints out there. And then secondly, maturity, creativity. And generative AI is different, right? Because right out of the gate, every single person in this audience right here has an endpoint that can use generative AI. It's either your phone or your computer. So that's what makes this wave so exciting and so much potentially, faster happening, disruptive, all those kind of things.
And I guess, how do you think, though, about timing of markets? Because it's just like a party. If you're the first person at the party, like, this party sucks. There's no one here. And, like, you probably just walk right out the door. But if you get there too late, like, I can barely get in the door. It's overcrowded. I can't get a drink. This party sucks.
Right.
Or maybe it's
This party is too pricey.
This party's too pricey. So how do you think about making sure that you're not the first person in the party and it's a bad experience, but also, yeah, you're the last person to come in and you're having to buy $10,000 bottle service?
Yeah. I mean, I do think you have to wade into the waters. Like, you can't, if you wait, then you're not, the problem with waiting too long is then you're not even relevant as a venture firm, yeah. Right? So people don't think of you. So then the best companies don't come to you. So I do think early on, build your framework, your market map, understand the trends, dynamics, attributes that you think make special companies, and get a couple of balls, pucks on the ice to start rolling forward.
Yeah.
And you'll learn from that. You'll learn from that with entrepreneurs. You'll build a network around that because you're already in. And, especially on a more speculative early one, that's what I would, recommend. I think it can be dangerous to say, I just have a vision that this is going to be huge and I'm going to go in and make 8 or 10 investments. Oftentimes that doesn't end well for people.
Yeah.
So that'd be my advice.
1,000%. Any final words of wisdom as we kind of leave the group here?
I do think the green shoots in this market cycle are more interesting than ever we've ever seen. They can grow from green shoots to really tall oak and sequoia trees or whatever. So it's kind of a fascinating time in this, again, this dichotomy between, all the help that the portfolio needs, and that's good hard work, and good things are going to come from that. And the market is coming back, buyers are back. So those companies are going to do better over time, but that can swamp you. But then there's just this massive new wave that is so enticing, and balancing that work for all of us is a challenge, but it's worth it, and what makes the job so exciting on behalf of ourselves and our LPs.
Yeah.
So
awesome.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for joining us.
Good to chat with you.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.